This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, a look at the changes coming for Spring Grove Village. Starting us off this afternoon, statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show foodborne illness is a common malady, with 1 in 6 Americans falling ill every year from consuming contaminated foods or beverages. Joining us to talk about foodborne illnesses, the most common types of food outbreaks and recalls, and food safety measures, are Cincinnati Health Department Registered Environmental Health Specialist Darius Porter and Professor Emeritus in the Division of Digestive Diseases at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Ralph Gianella. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ralph and Darius, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Darius, I'm kind of surprised by that number, that it's 1 in 6 get sick consuming some kind of contaminated food or beverage, and I didn't realize it was that common of an ailment. Why is it so prevalent? What makes foodborne illness so prevalent?
I think one of the main things that makes foodborne illness so prevalent is the difficulty associated with tracking the food from the farm to the table. A lot of the times, the places where food is basically processed, be it a factory farm or what have you, it's a lot of entities that monitor the food that goes through this channel. However, sometimes there's gaps in those monitoring activities, and then in the end, it's usually the consumer who ends up paying the price for the issue.
And Ralph, why do you think it's so common and so prevalent?
Well, in addition to what he just said, I think one of the things is our economy and our food supply system prepares foods in massive quantities. So frequently when something gets contaminated, it's spread across the country. It potentially can involve hundreds, if not larger, groups of people. For example, hamburger, when it gets processed, a common batch of ground meat might be 500,000 pounds. And that gets spread over states, and lots of food is prepared in bulk like that. And if it gets contaminated, it affects a lot of people.
So what exactly causes foodborne illness, Ralph? Is it virus, bacteria, or toxins? What are we talking about here?
Well, a foodborne illness can be defined by saying an illness caused by consuming food contaminated with bacteria, viruses, toxins, or chemicals. Any of those can cause what we call food poisoning.
Is any one of those more common than the others?
Oh, yeah. The commonest by far are bacterially contaminated food, like E. coli, which I think is most people have heard about, Salmonella, Campylobacter, and a bunch of others.
And what about rotavirus? I think that one pops up quite frequently, too, doesn't it? Or norovirus, excuse me, I think
yes.
It is.
It is, and it has the potential to be explosive. I mean, occasionally you find it on cruise ships where the entire passenger list can be affected.
So, Darius, how many different types of foodborne illnesses are there? I mean, it sounds like from what Ralph is saying, with all the different causes, there can be just as many different types of food poisoning.
Right. As far as the total number, I'm sure it's an infinite amount. However, in the state of Ohio, they focus on roughly 13 foodborne illnesses. And then in addition to that, of those 13, the FDA usually highlights about 6 of those foodborne illnesses. So just to go over the six most common include norovirus, E. coli, Salmonella, non-typhoidal, and Salmonella typhi. And then we have, I'm missing the fifth one, we have Shigella. So those are some of the ones that you commonly come across. The Shigella is really virulent, and it could really do some damage. We are, like the doctor had said, we're all familiar with E. coli and Salmonella. But I think part of the problem as far as education is concerned is that people aren't aware of the variety or the extra or the excess foodborne illnesses that they may encounter. People think when they deal with ready-to-eat foods that they don't have to worry about any foodborne illnesses because the food is cooked and or can be consumed without cooking, but that's probably furthest from the truth. Usually it's the ready-to-eat foods, more specifically vegetables, that could put a person in a bad position.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because I've oftentimes noticed on the ready-to-eat foods, when you get ready to pop them in the microwave, they say make sure you get them to a certain temperature.
Right.
I think it's 160.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay, so even there you have to be cautious.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Even with the ready-to-eat food, as you flow it through a certain temperature range where bacteria can proliferate, you want to do that as rapidly as possible, be it heating it up or be it cooling it down, in order to keep those bacteria in check. So that's primarily the reason why they say to get it up to 160.
Hmm. Well, you know, a related point is that the public thinks that its food is, first of all, certainly not sterile. No food is sterile. It all has bacteria. The issue is which ones and how many. Secondly, you have to assume that the food you buy is contaminated. You should assume that. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you have to wash vegetables and fruits. You have to thoroughly cook chicken and hamburger, etc. You can't assume it's clean and not contaminated.
So that's just a basic rule of thumb, then. Even if it is clean, don't assume it is.
Exactly.
Ralph, what are the symptoms of foodborne illnesses? Is there like a common pattern, or because we have so many different causes, there are all types of symptoms?
No, there is more or less a pattern or two. It's abdominal pain, cramps, diarrhea, maybe fever. And if the fever is high or if you have bloody diarrhea, then that's quite potentially serious. It could be Shigella, as was mentioned, or other serious illnesses. Those are the common presenting modes.
You know, it's interesting about Shigella because I've often heard that associated with being transmitted at pools.
Mm-hmm.
I never realized it was considered a foodborne illness.
Right, right, right. In addition to pools, children in school settings are really at risk for Shigella as well. Unfortunately, it's all too common that children don't wash their hands properly, or even not only children, but individuals, period, exiting the restroom, recontaminate their hands by touching various surfaces, including the doorknobs, as they exit the restrooms. So when it comes to Shigella, the high degree of diarrhea that you experience leads to it being very virulent and easily spreadable.
Mm. Another reason Shigella is so easily spread is the number of bacteria that you have to consume to get Shigella is extremely low, much lower than in Salmonella or in cholera, for example. So it spreads easily because you don't need much to get sick.
Ralph, are certain people more susceptible to foodborne illness than other people?
Yes. People who are sick, particularly people whose immune system are not up to par. For example, there are illnesses like HIV/AIDS. These people are highly susceptible. People who are taking drugs that tamp down your immune system. People who are taking steroid drugs, for example. And then there are a bunch of other drugs that can make you more susceptible as well. But anybody, in general, foodborne illnesses tend to strike preferentially the young, children, and the elderly, in part because their immune systems are not up to par.
Now, I've often heard people use the old saying, Darius, that I've got an iron stomach or an iron constitution.
Right.
I can eat anything.
Right.
And I've heard this from people time and time again. Now, does that actually work, or are they just fooling themselves in this case when it comes to foodborne illness?
I would say when it comes to foodborne illness, they're probably fooling themselves. What it is they have a high tolerance for pain, more than likely, or they have a strong immune system even. When people generally consume food and they end up with a foodborne illness, it doesn't have to be an extreme degree or expression of symptoms. It could just be a small stomach pain that a person may be experiencing, and they may write it off because they're able to continue functioning with their day. But in fact, that person may be experiencing a foodborne illness. So if a person, be it a food worker or at home or whomever, just a general citizen, if they are having an issue as far as stomach pains, they should never write off the fact that they may be experiencing a foodborne illness.
Ralph, did you want to say something?
No, I agree.
Okay. Ralph, how common is it for people to have a foodborne illness and then pass it off as being something else or think it's something else?
Well, you know, I haven't recently read the statistics at CDC, but as I recall, there's something like only 15,000 or 20,000 reported cases. And it's thought to be that there are probably 100-fold more cases, probably 10 or 20 million cases a year in the United States. But the great bulk of them are relatively brief, not that sick, only last a day or two, don't get reported. So lots of people have a stomach ache or something. it's food poisoning. They don't realize it's food poisoning because it's mild and goes away.
And can a foodborne illness put you in the hospital? Can it even be a life-threatening situation?
Definitely. As far as life-threatening, E. coli is definitely an issue when it comes to foodborne illness. But to speak beyond that, I myself have been admitted into the hospital a couple times as a result of a foodborne illness. Depending on the hospital and depending on your region and where you live, they may go above and beyond with the testing to diagnose what the foodborne illness is, or they may straightforward treat the symptoms. More often than not, it's said that it's more expensive to treat, or basically to do studies or test for viruses versus testing for bacteria when it comes to foodborne illnesses. So not to say that it's actually going to happen, but the likelihood exists that you may not be tested if you're admitted and it's determined that it's likely to be a norovirus issue.
Ralph, any idea how often people end up being hospitalized for foodborne illness?
Well, in children, it's not unusual because they have severe diarrhea and so quickly become dehydrated. Less so in adults. But as I remember it, in the United States, there may be 1,500 or 2,000 deaths a year due to foodborne illness.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. And we will continue it after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to talk about foodborne illnesses and food safety measures, Cincinnati Health Department Registered Environmental Health Specialist Darius Porter and Professor Emeritus in the Division of Digestive Diseases at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Ralph Gianella. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ralph, is dehydration the biggest danger if someone has a foodborne illness and if they end up hospitalized? How is that dehydration treated?
Now, dehydration is not the most worrisome thing. What's worrisome is that the infection can spread out of the gut into the bloodstream, and then that's potentially fatal. Fortunately, that doesn't happen as often as dehydration does. Dehydration, if untreated, can be severe, but generally all it requires is intravenous fluids, and then the patient recovers.
Now, is summer the worst time for this, Darius? Is this where you see more cases of... No, it's because you would think that with people grilling out, that might be.
No, I wouldn't say summertime is any more active than any other part of the season. In fact, even though you have your picnics in the summertime, people are consuming food all year round. And you have events such as Thanksgiving or weddings or what have you going on year round, big banquets, et cetera. So I wouldn't assign any season to it. I would just say that at any given time, because we're constantly consuming food, in addition to food, people typically don't think of ice or water as being a food item as well.
Or even right beverages can cause this
right,
too, right?
Right. So people have to be aware that the water could be contaminated that they're drinking. I think recently there was an individual who was swimming out in the lake and ingested water. However, it wasn't gastrointestinal, but it was a parasite in the water, and it did, in fact, kill her. So water can be a danger.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Will in Northern Kentucky. Hi, Will.
Hi. I have two questions for your panel. They're real short. Where do we report this? I hear this happened to me, myself, at Chipotle about 3 years ago. I didn't report it because I was too sick. Projectile vomiting, diarrhea, and I've heard people all the time talk about, you know, that. So where do we report it, and what's the follow-up in the health department? They don't have enough money to test to make sure it's from this restaurant versus from your own food. That's the first question. Secondly, can you talk about Listeria? And, you know, packaged foods you get from a grocery store, there's been a lot of recalls with Listeria. What exactly is that?
All right. As far as reporting is concerned, contact your local health department and know the address or at least the location of the restaurant that you ate at. Even if that restaurant isn't associated with your local health department, they'll usually forward it to whatever health department is responsible for inspecting that facility. The second question was about... not the Listeria. What was the second question?
Let's see here. Second question was about testing.
Testing, yeah. As it currently stands, some health departments have the capacity to do the testing in-house. other departments forward the food item up to the state level, and generally they have the resources or funds to do the testing, and then they'll inform you if there were any pathogens, or at least the level of the pathogens, because again, generally, as the doctor said, there is some level of pathogens present pretty much in all food, and generally your body is able to fight off those low levels, but if the level of pathogen grows too high, that's when your body can't handle the amount present, and then that's when the foodborne illness results.
And then this final question was on Listeria and packaged foods. What is Listeria, and how common is this?
Listeria, as far as the commonality, I'm not too sure because, again, data is usually by region and, or even state. But Listeria is a bacteria, and, again, it's a dangerous bacteria as well. In fact, it's been known to cause sepsis, which is basically poisoning of your blood, and even premature births and miscarriages in pregnant women as well. Generally, Listeria is found in items that contain dairy products and or sausages or cased meats or anything like that. That's generally where you find it.
Yeah, so how do you counter Listeria? Is that just making sure you cook the food properly to kill any bacteria?
Yes.
Go ahead, doctor.
Yes. First of all, Listeria is not that common as some of the things we've mentioned. The problem is it's potentially more fatal. It's a potentially extremely serious pathogen. It's treated with antibiotics. We know about it because recently there have been several recalls of various commercially available foods contaminated with Listeria. But it generally responds to antibiotics.
Are there certain foods that are more prone to carrying foodborne illness, Darius, people need to be aware of?
As I was mentioning earlier, from what I've read and the data that I've reviewed, vegetables are your primary reservoir as far as foodborne illness. It's vegetables or fruits,
That's surprising to me.
Things that you pull from the ground, I should say. And again, we've only mentioned a few of the foodborne illnesses out there, but vegetables, watching your vegetables carefully is really important. If you think of a lot of these outbreaks that you've heard at various restaurants, it's usually, be it tomatoes or leafy greens or something along those lines, being contaminated, say an E. coli being found in spinach.
Coleslaw carried something at one point, too.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of these farms are close to places where cows or what have you roam, and then that's how the contamination occurs a lot of the times. Or the water, itself becomes contaminated and it is used to wash those vegetables, and that's how that pathogen may be transmitted.
See, that surprised me because I would have thought meats would have been
Another important source is poultry. There have been recent surveys done that 25% of chicken available in the United States carries either Salmonella or Campylobacter, two potentially nasty bacteria. So one has to be especially careful with chicken. First of all, to cook it properly and thoroughly, and secondly, to avoid cross-contaminating other foods and surfaces with chicken. When you lay chicken on a cutting board and then, cut it, and then you're going to cut vegetables, you need to wash the board in between so that you don't cross-contaminate.
Indeed. As far as chicken is concerned, you have, in addition to chicken and other animal products, you have to think of the amount of water or juices that may be present with the food item itself, and those are easily splattered or splashed around the room and may end up on various surfaces. And then again, you could recontaminate yourself or the food item once it's done being cooked.
Well, we're talking about cross-contamination being a common, sounds like it's a common mistake that people make.
Right.
What are some of the other common mistakes that people make in their food preparation that could have dangerous consequences?
I would say prepping at the wrong time. I would prep ready-to-eat food items prior to prepping any raw animal product. Additionally, again, washing your vegetables, washing your chicken, washing your surfaces that you use to do these cuttings and prep work, and also cooking to the right temperature. It's really important as far as raw animal product is cooking to the right temperature to eliminate any pathogens that may be present. Additionally, freezing is an issue as well. So some fish that's sushi-grade fish gets frozen in order to destroy the parasites. So you have to be careful about who you're purchasing from and make sure that it's a reputable source.
What about you're talking about washing produce and food? I think there are like produce washers you can get, or they're like a soap product of some kind. Are those worth the effort?
I don't want to speak against them. I mean, it's all right to go above and beyond, but you can also go with just a simple vinegar and water solution as well, as far as washing your fruits and vegetables. That helps as well.
Yeah. Ralph, what do you think as far as using something, some kind of a produce, additional produce soap or something like that?
I think it's a good idea, but I think as a minimum, if people for some reason don't want to do it or can't afford it or whatever, it's cheap, just thoroughly wash it with water.
Okay. And as far as washing, you know, you see these signs in restrooms and restaurants about how employees mm-hmm. should wash their hands before they go back to work. So how important is that?
It's paramount. They say improper hand washing or improper hygiene is one of the primary reasons why viruses proliferate in society. And range, even though we're speaking about food, this could apply to avian, bird flu, or any other virus out there. They always say washing your hands is paramount. We advise against individuals leaning too hard on hand sanitizers, because we see that often in restaurants and even at home. It's not as effective as hand washing. In the end, hand washing is probably your best bet, because that agitation and those suds and the surfactants help to remove any pathogens on surfaces.
Mm-hmm. Does it have to be an antibacterial soap?
No, it could be a regular standard soap.
So as far as antibacterial soaps go, so that's
just added protection.
That's just added protection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, this is just food related, but you can make pathogens stronger by using too many antibiotics. So if possible, just stick with the straightforward soap.
Had a question about mayonnaise. Is mayonnaise the danger that people think it is? Ralph, Darius, you always hear about that. People thinking that's a problem.
Well, I think that comes from the fact that it's made with eggs. Eggs are a potential contaminated food. As I mentioned, poultry is 25% infected with salmonella, and that can be transmitted to eggs. But, I mean, if it's properly prepared by whoever makes the mayonnaise, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I just follow any directions on packaging as well. Even if it says keep it refrigerated. But additionally, if you have items that say keep them frozen until you're ready to use them. Because, again, pathogens generally are present in low levels, so you want to keep them in check.
Mm-hmm. So, Darius, if you could kind of summarize for us and give us the key things that people should do mm-hmm. as far as preparing their food, cooking it, and making sure that they're not going to be victimized by a foodborne illness.
Okay. I would definitely say wash your hands before you start any food prep. But while you're doing that food prep, stay focused on that task. If you're dealing with cutting chicken, don't go answering your phone or checking text messages or opening the doors up or anything, because you can spread pathogens that may be present in
and
that
chicken.
And focus
on preparing that chicken not moving on to something else as well. I'm going to do the chicken and this as well at the same time.
Right. When you're dealing with raw animal product, deal with that raw animal product. Don't multitask.
Do that first and then?
And then do your cook-up and then wash all surfaces before doing any other tasks.
And as far as cooking food at the proper temperature, is there any particular temperature, or does it vary from item to item?
Pretty much all animal products have different cooking temperatures associated with them. So to get that information, you can either check the health department's website, or you can go to the CDC or the FDA's website. It's out there. But generally, all food items have different cooking temperatures, and those cooking temperatures are intended to kill any pathogens present in the food.
And Ralph, despite foodborne illness being such a common malady, how safe really is the food supply in the U.S.?
You have to assume it's unsafe. That's my philosophy. The government is not required to absolutely guarantee that your food is safe and uncontaminated. They try, but it's an imperfect inspection system. So you have to assume your food is contaminated and handle it accordingly.
Agreed. When it comes to food, think guilty until proven innocent. That's basically the case. When it comes to regulating food, it's all about keeping food item or pathogens below a certain threshold. So that does mean that they're present. It's just that you don't want it to exceed that threshold.
Well, Darius and Ralph, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Cincinnati Health Department Registered Environmental Health Specialist Darius Porter and Professor Emeritus in the Division of Digestive Diseases at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Ralph Gianello. Coming up, we'll hear about efforts to revitalize Spring Grove Village and in Focus on Technology, how a UC graduate used artificial intelligence to beat the Air Force in simulated combat. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.